We are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Bormio.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se non mangiano le femmine.
So the good news is that Tom's kept the jersey. The bad news is he had to stop. You've probably heard to go to the toilet before the last descent of the Stelvio. He took all his clothes off and went to the toilet at the side of the road. Did you know anything about his stomach problems?
I didn't know. I heard on the radio something about him stopping.
I can't comment on that. This morning he didn't mention anything that something is wrong with his stomach, but... Yeah, I think just in the third week, the body is pretty much on the limit in every kind of way.
And prior to that, how had the stage gone from your point of view and from the team's point of view? It was pretty much what you expected, a big attack from Movistar.
Yeah, fireworks, I guess. We had Lawrence in the front, which was a really good situation for us, just up the Stelvio. And so we were pretty satisfied, and then the speed got too high for the rest of us, and Tom was isolated. But in the end, Lawrence could wait for him, and I don't know how the race went, but I guess on the last climb it was just every favorite for himself.
So he's got 20 seconds now, I think, or more or less 20 seconds. Do you fear another big attack tomorrow? It's not as hard as Thursday's stage, but do you think something might happen tomorrow as well?
Yeah, I guess every day there will be something happening now. So, yeah, 20-second lead is not much, but it's also not nothing.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Where is Lionel?
Lionel, well,
after, where are we? Where
well,
is
Lionel? Lionel's home now.
One back of the in Watford.
One of the benefits of all the fine dining that you gents did over the last week or so is that Lionel ended up so large that we were able to roll him home.
Italy has breathed a huge collective sigh of relief.
Save a bit of money.
The food crisis
is over.
We just
rolled him to the top of the Stelvio, and he's halfway through France now. He's bowling home. Lionel did a cracking job here in Italy. I've flown back out to take his place for the final week. We were played in there, and it's drama. I mean, you and Lionel spoke about nothing, about little else than food. We're going to turn our attention to what happens to the food once it's passed through the body today. I think this is going to be a scatological episode. We should have gone. She got a sponsor from Andrex or something for this. But we were played in there by Simon Geschke, the Sunweb rider. Daniel is cringing because, as you can probably tell from that exchange, he doesn't like talking about this subject. He gets very squeamish.
Disgusting. Refuse to talk about it, usually.
I didn't know this about you. It's fantastic. Brilliant. So it's going to be. This is going to be an uncomfortable episode.
Even
for you.
Saying the word toilet was uncomfortable for me.
I could tell. It was. Yeah. It was an awkward exchange. But you did a great job. You did a couple of other. Spoke to a couple of other people from somewhere about the pressing issue of the day. Shall we? We'll get on to that, will we? Because it's all about Tom Dumoulin and what happened to him today. First, sort of multi-mountain stage of the Giro. I'm doing the tail of the Tappa. 222 kilometres from Rovetto to Bormio, 5,300 metres of climbing, three major climbs. I'd say the first multi-mountain stage. For a lot of people, the Giro started today. We also dipped into Switzerland briefly. Early on, big group formed, three Movistar riders, which seemed to signal their ambitions for the day. On the Mortirolo, Daniel, were we going to say something there?
No.
On the Mortirolo, Louis Leon Sanchez.
Mortirolo light. Mortirolo zero.
Okay. Luis Leon Sanchez crossed the line first at the top ahead of Omar Filey, who let him cross the line first because, of course, Luis Leon Sanchez rides for Astana. And the prize at the top was the Cima Scarponi in memory of Michele Scarponi, the Astana rider who sadly died a few weeks ago. Then there was the two ascents of the Stelvio, different directions. First time up the Stelvio, Mikel Landa, Igor Anton clipped off the front. Landa took the Cima copy for the first man over the highest ascent in this Giro. Behind that, a Colombian fan pushed Quintana for a bit and got himself a bit of a slap from Balcomolomo and Tom Dumoulin. By the top of the Stelvio, there were nine in the front group, still with three Movistars there. Andre Armador, who was a danger overall, Gorka Izagirre, and winner Anacona had bridged across. Landa was making moves very early, with about 60Ks still to go. He was off the front, and he was obviously to play a big part later on as well. The gap never grew that big. It was under 2 minutes at this point. And then on the approach to the second ascent of the Stelvio, third climb of the day, the day's big talking point. Tom Dumoulin peeled off and then peeled off his shorts and answered a call of nature. The TV camera panned hastily away. And up front in the chasing group, with Landa still up front on his own now, Ilona Zakarin was riding quite hard, it looked like then. There was a sort of truce, as if riders didn't really know what to do, how they should react. It reminded me a little bit of 2003 Tour de France when Lance Armstrong came off, and there was some indecision, and it was unclear really whether riders were riding or not. But Franco Pellizotti was certainly riding for Vincenzo Nibali. He took over then Andre Amador for Nairo Quintana, and the gloves were off as they climbed the Stelvio for the second time. Meanwhile, Landa's still off the front. Nibali attacked 4 kilometres from the summit. He said at the finish there that he had Joaquim Rodriguez in the team car telling him where to go. He got off.
When to go.
Quintana joined him. Nairo Quintana joined him. Domenico Pozzovivo followed. And those three crossed the top there, just 15 seconds by Landa. The shark then dropped down the mountain faster than Dumoulin's bib shorts. Daniel,
how long have you been working on that?
He caught Landa and they fought out the finish. Landa made a bit of a mess of it. He let Nibali come up the inside. Nibali won the stage. First Italian victory of this Giro. Landa was frustrated. And Quintana crossed the line about 11 seconds down, I think it was, 12 seconds down. And then there was a wait for Tom Dumoulin, who held on to his pink jersey. He was 2:18 down in the end. Pretty decent effort, considering. I mean, I don't know how long he actually stopped for, but it can't have been much less than that, really, when you consider the time it takes to remove your helmet, your jersey, your bib shorts, and then put them all back on again. That must have been 2 minutes. So a hell of a ride by Tom Dumoulin, but he wasn't very happy at the finish, was he?
I saw our colleague and friend Dan Lloyd at the finish, and he mentioned something about, was he not wearing a zip-down jersey? But I thought Dan Lloyd is the only person who would have mentioned this. He's like, oh, well, if he'd been wearing a zip-down jersey, it would have been a lot easier, wouldn't it? Or something along those lines. Anyway,
good point.
Let's not dwell on this subject, Richard.
I thought there was going to be much choice.
No, I know. But yeah, what was interesting was how well he rode on the Stelvio last time up there was Giorgo di Santa Maria, actually, not the Stelvio. Because on Italian TV, they were convinced that he was completely collapsing. I was listening to Italian television, and he was doing no such thing. He wasn't capitulating by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, Laurens ten Dam, his teammate, said that he was screaming to go faster and faster and faster, and he looked really good on the bike, and he descended really well too. I think, with the slim advantage that he has on general classification now, he's very, very vulnerable. I think he's even vulnerable tomorrow. The profile of tomorrow's stage reminds me a bit of the Formigal stage in the Vuelta last year. The stage is double the distance, but just because there are no huge climbs, they go over the Tonale yesterday, and they go over the Tonale tomorrow, and the rest of the stage is pretty much uphill. But I think, you know, somewhere but braced for more chaos and another difficult day tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, Dumoulin, it's not comparable, but when you remember back to the stage of Blockhouse when Geraint Thomas and Adam Yates and others came off at near the foot of it and then had this chase, they went into the red chasing to limit their losses and then paid for it in the end and lost over 5 minutes. What was impressive with Dumoulin was clearly he was riding, chasing very hard initially. But he never cracked. He never really blew up. I mean, he was holding it around a minute, when you had Pellizotti and Amador, you know, the teammates of the big guns on the front. And I feared at that point that when Nibali and Quintana and these guys began attacking, and maybe Pino as well, that then the gap would really go out. But it didn't really.
No.
And that's a testament to how strong Dumoulin is.
Yeah, and it just bears out the fact that you can be isolated on a climb and it can not make that much difference. I mean, I was chatting to Dave Brailsford this morning, Team Sky principal, and he was talking about how Movistar and Sky have got this history of Froome being exposed to to Movistar and Movistar trying to attack Sky in numbers. And Brailsford has said, well, he said this morning that the mistake they've often made is they've attacked on the climbs and not in the valleys. Because, you know, in the valleys, a single guy is you know, really vulnerable. And it was the same today with Dumoulin. Once you're on a climb, and he seems to know his body very well, he seems to know, well, not that well, because he not that well on the evidence of today. But he knows the physiological capabilities of his body pretty well. And he was fine. He managed his effort very, very well on the final climb, didn't he?
He did. Nevertheless, he's lost a lot of time. You know, his lead's down to 31 seconds, and he's still got the final time trial to come. But his win, the chances of him winning look sort of less likely tonight, I think, or do they? Because we were talking earlier today, and you were suggesting that you'd be surprised if he was still in pink tonight.
Yes, so he performed
beyond your expectations.
My expectations. Yeah, certainly, and I think it's worrying that his team. I wouldn't say they folded or capitulated, but. He didn't have an awful lot of help in the second half of the stage. You had Lawrence Tendam, who had been up the road earlier on. Geschke played a role at a certain point, but Preidler, another of his important climbers, was popped pretty early. Chad Hager was, I think, popped fairly early. And then they've got a couple of young guys, Bauhaus and Lunker, who really aren't going to be much help in the climbs. So that's a worry. I think it's particularly a worry, well, looking forward to tomorrow and Thursday. Should we hear from some of the chaps from Sunweb? Should we hear from Lawrence Tendam, who's in the break today and was very helpful for Tom Dumoulin towards the end of the stage, and Ike Visbeek, the director sportif at Sunweb?
I think you saw all what happened on television, right? So he got a shit. He had a little bit of stomach problems, diarrhea, and we had to find the right moment to stop, to get rid of the... Yeah, the stuff, and once he got rid of it, I think he found back his legs, and because he was in my wheel, only yelling, go faster, 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 and yeah, I was really tired from jumping on the Motirolo and fighting on the Stelvio, so it couldn't help him as much as I wanted, but it is what it is, and now we have to recover and go for tomorrow.
Yeah, no, nature called. And he had an emergency, and that was a very lousy timing. And when he came down from the Stelvio the first time, when we came into the valley, he directly said, I think I need to go. And then he tried to hold it, but no, he had to stop and go for a number two.
Disappointed that Movistar didn't slow down, or Bahrain didn't slow down?
To be honest, my television was not working, so I mean... I think it's a bit. It's not nice for the fans because now you. It's. I mean, he rode almost as fast as those guys up the mountain, so it could have been an epic battle, and an epic battle that maybe Nibali anyway wins the stage, maybe with a little bit better feeling. But yeah, I mean, we conduct the sport in our way, and we try to be as gentlemen as we can be and as fair as we can be. And it's not up to me to judge the others. We did what we normally would do, and it's up to others to decide how they deal with a situation like this.
Is your hunch that Tom is okay, that his health is okay, he's not going to be ill tomorrow?
No, I think I've never seen a guy with stomach problems riding so fast up a mountain. So I suggest it was an emergency rather than sickness.
Could he have gone on the bike? It has been done before.
Yeah, but you have to make a choice. And I mean, if you do it on the bike and you have to ride up a mountain for, 12K or something, that's not pleasant as well. And then you see now, anyway, he... does damage control, but it's of course disappointing to have that advantage and then over something like that lose time. Those guys in front were riding for the stage, and we were, and there was the group of Jungels who were desperate to come back, and he was alone, and he did a very good descent, and he climbed very good, so I can just say that I'm proud of how he rode, and I think he has given the others something to think about.
Hi, it's Trixie, rider from Canyon SRAM Racing, and you are listening to the cycling podcast in association with Rafa. My favorite item of clothing, I would say it's a long tight bib short. I don't like leg warmers so much, so when it's a bit colder, I like to have the long pants on. My favorite ride is Tour of Qatar, because yeah, it's flat obviously, and I like the wind there. I like to race in the gutter.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much indeed to our main sponsor, Rafa. Lionel's mentioned the last few nights their new range of Merino t-shirts. Two of them commemorate the climbs we went up today, the Stelvio and the Mortirolo slim fit t-shirts. I guess the one commemorating the Mortirolo climb today would be extra slim fit, would it, Daniel? Because, as you said, it wasn't...
Oh, yeah, no, it was not the hard way at the Mortirolo. But, you know, a lot of people... I saw some criticism for the organisers, you know, not sending it the right way at the Mortirolo, the famous way at the Mortirolo. But, you know, they had to... Well, the route had to leave from where it left, and it had to get to where it finished.
Geography is a factor.
And also, you know, the real Mortirolo that early in the stage, on a stage that was already, it was borderline ridiculous. The amount of climbing and the amount of time in the saddle, I think, you know, it was fine. It was fine.
I was talking about these t-shirts available at rafa.cc if you want to check them out. Stelvio and Mortirolo are two of them. They're very nice indeed. It's funny that you mentioned the ridiculousness of the stage. Being back at the team buses, you were at the finish, I was at the team buses, which were a bit away. Seeing the riders come back, and you know, some of them were very, very unhappy because it was a long day today, an early start, a long day. Tomorrow's another long day. There have been a lot of long days, and this week is... Michael Hepburn, in particular, the Orica Scott rider, was very unhappy, just angry generally at the brutality of this Giro. And you know, as I said earlier, there are some saying it's only started today, and we saw we're going to talk about Nibali, the stage winner, of course, because he's repeating a pattern where he's been lurking, hasn't he? And he might be a real force
first,
in this final
week.
First,
Richard, we were going to talk about whether Bahrain should have slowed down, shouldn't they?
Not just Bahrain, but Movistar, Katusha as well, because Zakarin was quite active.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe... I don't agree with Iker Visbeek, the Sunweb Direct Sportif, on this. You know, Lionel and I had a debate last week about Quintana and Movistar, whether they should have waited for Geraint Thomas. And I remember you upbraided me on Twitter, probably rightly so. Oh, cheers here. Just very quickly then... we hear so much about refueling strategies, feeding strategies, when riders should eat, putting suanos out on the course to give riders extra beat-ons and so forth and so forth. And this is all considered to be like part of good strategy, good practice among teams. But is it not also good practice to make sure, you know, your riders don't need to go to the bathroom at certain points?
Well, I think this was an emergency. I don't think it was something he
could plan for. As we've said, I don't like being interrupted. As we've said many times before, a Grand Tour is a test of health above all else. Mm-hmm. Above all else. And, if Tom Dumoulin's health failed him momentarily, then, you know, he has to pay the price for
tough
that.
Tough love. I think it's possible to hold two apparently contradictory positions where you have sympathy for Tom Dumoulin, but also recognise that the race was kind of on at that point, and it was very unfortunate that he had to do what he had to do. But as one or two people point out, the race wasn't just happening among those GC contenders in the group. There were guys up the road as well who were potentially dangerous, including Stephen Kruijswijk, who was still an outsider
at
that
point. Fair point.
So there was that factor. I think the one thing Dumoulin could have done, which I don't think he did do, was to go and speak to his rivals and explain his problem to them.
Excuse me, Mr. Quintana.
No, but tell them what the problem was, because none of them seemed to know what the problem was.
Have a bit of a dicky stomach, well, Mr. Quintana.
Okay, there are certain riders, though, who in the past would have been able to do that, aren't there? Certain patrons who would have been able to say to people, you know, this is a situation, you know, I've got a problem here, I need to stop. And then he'd have been able to say at the end, well, I told them about it and they took advantage of it. As it was, they were kind of in the dark. They didn't really know what happened. They didn't know where he was. How long should they have waited? Before we hear from Ciro, should we hear, in fact, from the director sportif at Team Katusha, whose rider Emil Zakarin was one of the riders pushing on. And that is Dmitry Konyshev.
The silver bullet.
Here is Dmitry Konyshev. Just wondered what you what you thought of the what happened on the stage there when Dumoulin stopped and the riders in the group carried on. Zakarin especially was riding quite hard at the front there. Did they do the right thing, or should they have waited for him, do you think?
Well, I don't know if they have to wait. I don't know. When Zak tried to attack from the start of the climb, I stopped him because we need to see what's happened later. So they, for me, they go quite easy for first 5 kilometers. Mm. Then they see he don't come back because they start the race. Because it was interesting for the teams, for the people in the front to win the stage also. So
that was a complication, the fact there were riders up ahead.
Yeah, sure. But you know, it's a flat stage or stage. This was really complicated to wait. This is GC is still in play in the game. So wait him. I don't really know.
Have you seen anything like that happen before?
Pink jersey to shit.
the leader so far into the stage and on such an important stage.
Yeah, I saw him already after Stelvio, just after we came down after the Stelvio. He was a little bit behind, and then he stopped. But I think it's nothing lost. He lost only 2 minutes, I think. 2 minutes to Kitana, even less. So for me, it's still open. Eh?
So you think, I mean, they eased off a bit. They didn't go flat out. They eased off a bit. They gave him a chance to come back.
For me, they wait a little bit for understand the situation. How is it? So if he was strong enough, I think he could came back. But it was 1 minute. 1 minute 10, it's always more and more and more, and they cannot stop to wait for him, as for me.
So that was Konyshev making, I think, a reasonable point. Like I say, I think I've got a lot of sympathy for Dumoulin. I think a lot more people now will want him to win this Giro than did before the start of the stage, although a lot did anyway. But I've got a lot, I think that Konyshev is right. They had that, there was a point where they had to just race, I'm afraid, and they did.
I've got a lot of sympathy for Chiro. He's been waiting for 3 or 4 minutes and he hasn't
been
able to talk.
3 or 4 minutes?
Oh, listeners, I mean, it's really a shame. Why should I wait? No, I don't understand. No, but I'm joking. Certainly, just yesterday evening, I had a little chat with our friend Shark, Vincenzo Nibali, and I said, Vincenzo, I don't understand.
You didn't say Vincenzo. You presumably, you call him the Shark, don't you?
No. I call him Enzo, as his father.
I noticed you've even started calling him Enzo in the paper. In La Gazzetta.
Yeah. I'm very, very familiar. But I said, Enzo, I don't understand this. A lot of people are happy because now the third week is on the paper for you. And so all the Italian people are happy because you can recover. But nobody cares that the third week is the worst for me, listeners, with all these mountains. Why people are not worried for this?
Chiro, what did Nibali say about Dumoulin needing to go to the bathroom?
Well, he said that in the very beginning he didn't understand the situation, and that he heard from the radio that the Maglia Rossa stopped. In the very first moments, the peloton waited a little bit, but it was that he said that it was not possible to wait because there was a man dangerous as Kruiswijk in the breakaway, and so it was simply not possible. He also did a comparison with Peter Sagan in the words of Geelong, if I'm not wrong, in 2010, that he had the same problem and nobody waits for him. So.
What a performance, though, Chiro. What a performance.
Yeah, the shark is back.
You write off Vincenzo Nibali at your peril. He's always there, and he always puts on a show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly is this. And moreover, I would add that now, certainly, the Giro is it's maybe open as never in the past. So it will be very, very exciting.
Chiro, do you know why I don't want Nibali to win? Because if he wins, he might write another book like that atrocity, like that awful book that he wrote about last year's Giro. I've got in the car and we were going to read out bits of it, but it's too bad. I can't bring myself to read bits out.
I mean, as if I'm not wrong, I already said in the podcast, the most important thing that you can be sure, listen, that I never will write a book with the shark. No way. And he already knows this.
Thank you, Chiro. and cheerio. The shark, yeah, the shark's back. What about Quintana though, Daniel? Tentative. I mean, he had these three men in the break today. Everybody was waiting for him to make his move on the first time up the Stelvio. Otherwise, what was the point? And in the end, Movistar played a bit of a game. They had Amador in a strong position. He's fallen away tonight. He lost a lot of time, actually, in the end today. So they don't have that option anymore. Winner Anacona as well, who always looks very menacing, doesn't he?
Have you ever seen the film Romancing the Stone?
I have, yeah.
He reminds me of the Colombian chap in that.
Mm. Anyway. Well, he is Colombian. Yeah. And he almost didn't... He and Quintana only made it to the start today thanks to me because they were lost. And I pointed them in the direction of the start. But they were still looking menacing even when I helped them out.
Sometimes Quintana can look a little bit like the blunt instrument, the blunt sort of weapon that Quintana use. Especially before the very end of the third week. When it gets towards the back end of the third week, then his resilience and his endurance come into play and he starts to look a lot more sprightly than some of the other riders. And obviously that's what they're hoping will happen this time. But as far as, you know, aggressive racing is concerned, we've often been here debating whether they've used their men in the right way or whether they've let slip opportunities. And today was another one of those days. You know, incredible power in numbers, a great collective strength. And, you know, you thought that the tactic exactly mimicked what Giuseppe Martinelli, the Astana director, told us they should do a couple of days ago. He said Amador and Anacona should go down the road. They should make Sunweb chase. And then, that was slightly negated by the fact that Tendam was also in the break. However, you know, they managed to put those guys down the road, but you were thinking to set up Quintana for his big crackerjack attack on the Stelvio, and it never came. And
but there's more than one way to skin a cat, and perhaps the reason that Dumoulin was isolated then was because his riders had been chasing quite hard, because they were, I mean, they were on the front a lot of what was a very long attritional hot stage, and perhaps that's the reason why when he needed help, Dumoulin, only Tendam was there and he was pretty tired.
And he is in a great position still. I think he's still the sort of virtual leader of this Giro, I would suggest.
Who?
Quintana. So, you know, we're here debating and possibly criticising some of their tactics or wondering whether they could have had a better day. But I still think that he's the favourite to win this Giro. Just looking at the general classification, Rich, you're going to read out the time gaps,
well,
aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, Dumoulin is first, obviously. Quintana at 31 seconds, Nibali at 112. I mean, today, if you look at the stage result, there was Dumoulin 13th at 218. The next rider was over 3 minutes further back. So there's a real... Today, the gaps really start to open, and they'll open up even more over the rest of the week.
Is Pino out of it?
He's down to fourth, Pino. He's at 2:38. I mean, I think
he's a big stage, doesn't he?
Zakarin is looking better than Pino, isn't he? Zakarin seems to be...
His descending has been terrible, though. Today was terrible again.
Remember he had that terrible crash last year.
Yeah, he seems to have got the yip since his time trial last year, where he crashed three times.
And then he also crashed on the Agnello, no? Crashed out of the Giro last year, just after Kruijswijk crashed. And I have to say, that is a very impressive thing about Nibali. Sometimes riders, when they've had a bad crash, they lose a bottle a bit. Nibali, he's a great descender, but he pushes it, and he's had his fair share of terrible crashes
and
as well.
And Rich, in common with another great descender, Peter Sagan, he makes a lot of mistakes, but
he almost had a couple today.
Well, yeah, and the remarkable thing about Nibali, and I think this is what differentiates him from other descenders, is that he corrects the mistakes. You know, the mistakes that Nibali makes would cause crashes with most other riders.
The bunny hop over the puddle was good, wasn't it? That was clever as well, but to do it just before a bend was also risky. It was seat of your pants stuff, really, to watch. But
seat
great
of your pants of all today and all day.
Well, it was. We haven't talked about it that much, have we? We've steered clear.
Enough,
really.
Enough, I would say,
of that.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
I'm Bram Tankink, Lotto Nello Jumbo, pro rider. I remember one year in the tour, I you know, we were on a mountain and I saw all these cows with the bells and, you know, just walking. And then that night I dreamed I was in a cow factory and they were milking cows and they were just standing with the bells. And then someone told me that as a rider, when you die, you get reincarnated as a cow. So that was a pretty shocking dream. Yeah, after I woke up from the dream, I didn't sleep anymore, I think. But there's always a dream I kept in my mind. And when I see the cows, I think, these are all ex-riders, you know. But they don't have to suffer at least anymore. maybe they do. I don't know. But
thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. We'll be hearing our next sort of nutrition-themed feature from Science and Sport in tomorrow night's episode. And a reminder that you can get 20% off all your products at scienceandsport.com if you use the code CPOD20. That's CPOD20. And we were played in there, though, Daniel. I mean, Daniel was off. I was flying in yesterday. Lionel flew out. And Daniel didn't waste the rest of it. He was off doing some pretty remarkable journalism.
Incredible. This is something I've wanted to do for a few years, actually. I heard about this theory of Bram Tankinks a few years ago.
We should say he's a veteran Dutch rider on Team Lotto NL.
Yeah, never heard it from the horse's mouth or the cow's mouth. But there it was. And it's one of many intriguing theories that Bram Tankinks got about the world and about cycling and about, in fact, Rich, about suffering on a bike. We're going to hear some of those tomorrow, aren't we? Because we've got a kilometre zero landing about precisely that topic, suffering, surviving the mountains.
How the riders cope, basically. What tricks they play. What tricks they play in their mind to get through stages like today's. And we'll hear from a lot of riders in that episode of Kilometre Zero. We did have an episode of Kilometre Zero out on Monday as well. It was remembering Michele. It was a tribute to Michele Scarponi. I mentioned him earlier. Died a few weeks ago. Saw some very sad pictures today, actually, of his widow. And, you know, Astana been racing here with that shadow over them, I suppose. And it's a very nice episode, especially Manuel Quinziato, the BMC rider, at the start of the episode, very nice sort of memories of Scarponi. And that was our episode of Kilometre Zero on Monday. Two more to come, Wednesdays, and then a final one on Friday. They're all supported by All Press Espresso, and we're very grateful indeed to them, as we are to our other sponsors. We're going to hear later at the end of this episode from Joe Dombrowski in the Maserati.
Almost is the end of the episode.
We're also grateful,
Rich,
to them. It's amazing we've got so far in this episode of all episodes without me mentioning the opening to a book called Slaying the Badger, which describes, yes, a scene not unsimilar to today's, in that it involves a call of nature, an emergency, a number two emergency.
Well, Rich, you mentioned that this has happened to Tom Dumoulin before.
It has, yeah. He's had this as well. He dipped into a camper van on the Tour de France a few years ago, for an emergency call of nature. And Greg LeMond, it happened to him in 1986 in the first week of the Tour de France, or about the eighth stage, I think it was.
Jan Bakelants apparently has experience of this. I don't know.
Amazing it doesn't happen more often, really. I mean, today's stage was, you know, it was 6 hours, 6 hours 25. It's a long time to manage your bodily functions, isn't it?
Yeah, should we move on?
I've never seen anyone look so uncomfortable.
Should we move on to Joe Dombrowski?
Okay, so I arrived back on the Giro yesterday and went straight to the Cannondale Hotel. Spoke to Michael Woods, actually, the Canadian rider who's making his Grand Tour debut at the grand old age of 30, I think he is. And Joe Dombrowski, who's a bit of a car nut, which is a bit of a surprise because he's quite bookish, isn't he, Dombrowski? A bit of an intellectual. He did a diary for us at the Giro last year, some of you will remember. But anyway, he's quite a car fan, and I knew he'd like the Maserati, so we went for a drive. Here it is.
The Cycling Podcast, on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati.
I'll get in the driver's seat just now, you get in the passenger seat, and then we'll swap over, okay?
Okay, perfect.
You okay, Matt? You fine? You find some space. Ah, how's it going? Hey, we're just kidnapping Joe.
We're saying goons so much. We're all saying goons.
Oh, no, we don't want that.
It smells terrible here. You're right.
It does.
It's like a bit of a mix of...
This is disgusting.
It's Daniel's
free sweat and nice new leather.
Yeah. The leather wants to win this battle, but it can't seem to do it.
Don't reverse it into a Cannondale vehicle.
Nige, if you think you're going to keep up with this, you got another thing coming.
After.
Joe, how's your Giro going?
The Giro's going well. We are at the final rest day. And we're about to get into a very mountainous final week. It's been... nothing super suited to me yet, so it's been a bit of a quiet Giro. And I'm looking forward to getting to the last week. I don't know exactly how I'll go in the mountains, but I hope well.
How's it compared to last year? Because last year you as a team obviously had a real clear focus with Rigoberto Urán as a leader. Here this time not such a focus. How's that made the first couple of weeks? Has that made them sort of seem longer because you had a clear role, you know, even if it was looking after Rigo last year in those stages, it might not have suited you.
Yeah, we definitely are a bit more open this year. So it's not every day that I have a super clearly defined role. But that's been nice, and, you know, there's still always things to do. And with it being open like that, we typically have a rider that the stage is suited to. So it might even be something as simple as trying to help them get into the breakaway.
I need to find a place where I can turn. But what do you think of the Maserati so far, Joe? Because you were suggesting before we got in it that you might fancy a little sponsorship deal.
Yeah, I could definitely take a free Maserati. It's great. I haven't driven yet, but I mean, know that you're about to let me drive.
They sponsor David Miller at the moment. I mean, very much yesterday's man. Whereas you're an up-and-coming guy, you might be the next David Miller.
I am a car fan as well.
Let's swap places. I don't want to do a movie star and let the handbrake off. Do you think, why turn it around, Joe? Because it's a big old beast.
Okay. Do you ever drive with the paddles?
I don't even know how you do that. What do you mean, drive with the paddles?
These things.
Is that what they're for?
Yeah, I'll show you.
I didn't know that.
I'll show you.
I didn't know what they were for. So do you know what you're doing here?
I think so. I just put it into drive.
Yeah. Right?
So here's the paddles, see?
Joe, have you ever fancied driving competitively?
I have. You know, I've been to the track a few times. But I've thought post-cycling career...
You know this isn't a track, yeah?
This isn't a track, but it is a great driving road. I told you about this, didn't I?
Yeah.
Are you afraid?
No.
Okay.
No, it's all fine. A lot of pro bike riders are really into their cars. Why is that?
Well, we obviously like speed.
Obviously.
Yeah. Well, there's the whole racing component. I actually find it quite relaxing. I don't know if that was relaxing for you, but it was fun for me. Wow.
So well done, Joe.
Thanks.
So how did you like that?
It was great.
Yeah?
I
did tell you.
So you get this all month here in Italy.
Yeah. I told you that if you did this, you would get to keep the car, but that wasn't serious.
That was a lie.
Yeah, it was just to entice you in.
Well, at least I got a fun drive. Some entertainment on my rest day.
The Cycling Podcast on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati. Visit maserati.co.uk to find out more about the new Levante, the Maserati of SUVs. Yours from £56,250 on the road.
So that was Joe Dombrowski putting our car through its paces. You've taught me a few tricks, actually, Daniel. I tend to deploy them over the next few days. We better head off because dinner calls, and to honour the memory of Lionel Burney, we need to make sure we feast. Gorge ourselves
maybe
every night.
What's tonight? We're in Valtellina tonight. It's maybe pizzoccheri, which is kind of like strips of like a whole wheat pasta.
Well, we had some of that earlier today in the buffet.
Yeah, we did. Very hearty mountain fare. Bresaola, of course, which you get in, you know, you probably get where you live now, Rich. Tooting. Bresaola, you know what Bresaola is, don't you?
Pure beef. Oh, yeah. Get a lot of that. Tooting.
Yeah, so... I'm trying to think what else there is. But anyway, I'm sure I'm sure we'll find something.
Well, I hope we will. It's getting quite late, taste buds. So let's go. Daniel, thank you very much, and let's reconvene tomorrow night. A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometre Zero. The music in this episode is by Amara Terra. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who help keep us on the road, in particular David Luxon, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian and Simon Gill. And thanks to Mariana DeForge, who produced this episode.